Chapter 111. Effect has never passed my lips and never will. Apostrophe, Tom promised this, conditionally too. He did not tell her how improbable it was that he and the old man would ever meet again, because he thought it might disturb her more. If he should ever know this, through your means, dear Mr. Pinch, apostrophe said Mercy, tell him that I sent the message, not for myself, but that he might be more forbearing and more patient, and more trustful to some other person, in some other time of need. Tell him that, if he could know how my heart trembled in the balance that day, and what a very little would have turned the scale, his own would bleed with pity for me. Apostrophe, yes, yes, apostrophe said Tom, I will. Apostrophe, when I appeared to him the most unworthy of his help, I was, I know I was, for I have often, often, thought about it since, the most inclined to yield to what he showed me. Oh, if he had relented, but a little more, if he had thrown himself in my way for, but one other quarter of an hour, if he had extended his compassion for a vain, unthinking, miserable girl, in but the least degree, he might, and I believe he would, have saved her. Tell him that I don't blame him, but am grateful for the effort that he made. But ask him for the love of God, and youth, and in merciful consideration for the struggle which an ill-advised and unwakened nature makes to hide the strength that thinks its weakness, ask him never, never, to forget this, when he deals with one again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, although Tom did not hold the clue to her full meaning, he could guess it pretty nearly. Touched to the quick, he took her hand and said, or meant to say, some words of consolation. She felt and understood them, whether they were spoken or no. He was not quite certain, afterwards, but that she had tried to kneel down at his feet, and bless him. He found that he was not alone in the room, when she had left it. Mrs. Todgers was there, shaking her head. Tom had never seen Mrs. Todgers, it is needless to say, but he had a perception of her being the lady of the house, and he saw some genuine compassion in her eyes that won his good opinion. Ah, sir, you are an old friend, I see, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers. Yes, apostrophe said Tom. And yet, apostrophe quoth Mrs. Todgers, shutting the door softly, she hasn't told you what her troubles are, I'm certain. Apostrophe, Tom was struck by these words, for they were quite true. Indeed, apostrophe he said, she has not. Apostrophe, and never would, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, if you saw her daily. She never makes the least complaint to me, or utters a single word of explanation or reproach. But I know, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, drawing in her breath, I know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom nodded sorrowfully, so do one. Apostrophe, I fully believe, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, taking her pocket handkerchief from the flat reticule, that nobody can tell one half of what that poor young creature has to undergo. But though she comes here, constantly, to ease her poor full heart without his knowing it, and saying, Mrs. Todgers, I am very low today, I think that I shall soon be dead, sits crying in my room until the fit is past, I know no more from her. And, I believe, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, putting back her handkerchief again, that she considers me a good friend too. Apostrophe, Mrs. Todgers might have said her best friend. Commercial gentlemen and gravy had tried Mrs. Todgers' temper. The main chance it was such a very small one in her case, that she might have been excused for looking sharp after it, lest it should entirely vanish from her sight had taken a firm hold on Mrs. Todgers' attention. But in some odd nook in Mrs. Todgers' breast, up a great many steps, and in a corner easy to be overlooked, there was a secret door, with woman written on the spring, which, at a touch from Mercy's hand, had flown wide open, and admitted her for shelter. When boarding-house accounts are balanced with all other ledgers, and the books of the recording angel are made up forever, perhaps there may be seen an entry to thy credit, lean Mrs. Todgers, which shall make thee beautiful. She was growing beautiful so rapidly in Tom's eyes, for he saw that she was poor, and that this good had sprung up in her from among the sordid strivings of her life, that she might have been a very Venus in a minute more, if Miss Pecksniff had not entered with her friend, Mr. Thomas Pinch. Said Charity, performing the ceremony of introduction with evident pride. Mr. Model, where's my sister? Gone, Miss Pecksniff, Mrs. Todgers answered. She had appointed to be home. Said Charity, looking at Tom. Oh, dear me. She's greatly altered since she's been enough since she's been married, Mrs. Todgers. Observed Model. My dear Augustus. Said Miss Pecksniff, in a low voice. I verily believe you have said that 50,000 times, in my hearing. What a prose you are. This was succeeded by some trifling love passages, which appeared to originate with, if not to be wholly carried on by Miss Pecksniff. At any rate, Mr. Model was much slower in his responses than is customary with young lovers, and exhibited a lowness of spirits which was quite oppressive. He did not improve at all when Tom and he were in the streets, but sighed so dismally that it was dreadful to hear him. As a means of cheering him up, Tom told him that he wished him joy. Joy! Cried Model. Ha! Ha! What an extraordinary young man! Thought Tom. The scorner has not set his seal upon you. You care what becomes of you? Said Model. Tom admitted that it was a subject in which he certainly felt some interest. I don't, said Mr. Model. The elements may have me when they please. I'm ready. Tom inferred from these, and other expressions of the same nature, that he was jealous. Therefore he allowed him to take his own course, which was such a gloomy one, that he felt a load removed from his mind, when they parted company at the gate of Furnival's Inn. It was now a couple of hours past John Westlock's dinner time, and he was walking up and down the room, quite anxious for Tom's safety. The table was spread, the wine was carefully decanted, and the dinner smelt delicious. Why, Tom, old boy, where on earth have you been? Your box is here. Get your boots off instantly, and sit down. I am sorry to say I can't stay, John, replied Tom Pinch, who was breathless with the haste he had made in running up the stairs. Can't stay. If you'll go on with your dinner, said Tom, I'll tell you my reason the while. I mustn't eat myself, or I shall have no appetite for the chops. There are no chops here, my food fellow. No. But there are at Islington, said Tom. John Westlock was perfectly confounded by this reply, and vowed he would not touch a morsel until Tom had explained himself fully. So Tom sat down, and told him all, to which he listened with the greatest interest. He knew Tom too well, and respected his delicacy too much, to ask him why he had taken these measures without communicating with him first. He quite concurred in the expediency of Tom's immediately returning to his sister, as he knew so little of the place in which he had left her, and good-humoredly proposed to ride back with him in a cab, in which he might convey his box. Tom's proposition that he should sup with them that night, he flatly rejected, but made an appointment with him for the morrow. And now Tom, he said, as they rode along, I have a question to ask you to which I expect a manly and straightforward answer. Do you want any money? I am pretty sure you do. I don't indeed, said Tom. I believe you are deceiving me. No. With many thanks to you, I am quite in earnest, Tom replied. My sister has some money, and so have one. If I had nothing else, John, I have a £5 note, which that good creature, Mrs. Lupin, of the Dragon, handed up to me outside the coach, in a letter begging me to borrow it, and then drove off as hard as she could go. And a blessing on every dimple in her handsome face, say I. " cried John. "Though why you should give her the preference over me, I don't know. Never mind. I bide my time, Tom. " and I hope you will continue to bide it, returned Tom, gaily. "For I owe you more, already, in 100 other ways, than I can ever hope to pay." They parted at the door of Tom's new residence. John Westlock, sitting in the cab, and catching a glimpse of a blooming little busy creature darting out to kiss Tom, and to help him with his box, would not have had the least objection to change places with him. Well, she was a cheerful little thing, and had a quaint, bright quietness about her that was infinitely pleasant. Surely she was the best sauce for chops ever invented. The potatoes seemed to take a pleasure in sending up their grateful steam before her, the froth upon the pint of porter pouted to attract her notice. But it was all in vain. She saw nothing but Tom. Tom was the first and last thing in the world. As she sat opposite to Tom at supper, fingering one of Tom's pet tunes upon the tablecloth, and smiling in his face, he had never been so happy in his life. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.